10 past 8. The morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really excited to have three people in the studios with me today, including Nan Calvert paying her monthly visit to the program. And her friend Dave Giordano is with us as well from Pike Wynn. And a guest that we are meeting today for the first time, or I should say I'm meeting for the first time, Adrienne Sizek, who is Senior Project Engineer with Stormwater Solutions Engineering. And we are going to be talking about a groundbreaking new way of dealing with stormwater runoff that could be of tremendous benefit in our area, in our community. And so we're going to be talking about all that, and a warm welcome to all three of you to the morning show.
Thanks. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So, Nan, explain, first of all, just in general, before we dig into some specifics, why stormwater runoff is an important topic for us to be talking about. And Dave, feel free to join in.
Well, I'm so glad you asked me that question, because people tend to regard stormwater runoff as a waste product, but it's not a waste product. It's our water. It's not any different than any other kind of fresh water that we deal with. What happens, though, is that when stormwater goes across our impervious surfaces and also our lawns and other things, it unfortunately picks up a whole bunch of things that we really don't want in there. And then stormwater runoff runs off directly into the nearest body of water. So it could be the Root River, the Pike River, Pike Creek. It could be Lake Michigan. It could be a whole list of our nearest bodies of water. And then all of that stuff that it picked up as it went along gets deposited into those bodies of water. Those of us who live near Lake Michigan know that we get our drinking water from Lake Michigan. If that storm water has a chance to percolate back down underground into the underground aquifers where it's supposed to go, it brings that stuff into the aquifers as well. And unfortunately, we've dealt with stormwater runoff the same way for decades, but we really don't have the luxury, if you will, of doing that anymore. So regenerative stormwater conveyance, RSC, is a cutting-edge way of managing stormwater, and What's really cool is that it involves native plants as well. I always tell people that native plants are the intercessors between earth and sky. And so one of the many jobs that native plants have is helping stormwater runoff go back down underground along its extensive root systems, during which time it becomes somewhat filtered. and obviously it controls the volume and velocity of stormwater runoff, goes back down underground, where then it eventually bubbles back up to the surface as it's supposed to. We think of all of this stormwater runoff as a normal condition, but it isn't. It's actually a very deranged condition. Before everything was paved over and flattened and native vegetation was removed, the vast majority of stormwater went back down underground along plant root systems. Statistics say that about maybe 4% prior to all of this kind of development that we have actually ran off directly into our lakes, rivers, and streams. Only 4%. Hmm. But it's much different now. And so we have to replace the functional aspect of our landscapes and our hardscapes to replicate what used to happen before the water cycle was interrupted, essentially.
By all of this paving
exactly,
over that
right.
we have done.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And so this initiative that we're going to be talking about today is one way to do that, to, in a sense, kind of turn back the clock.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We send stormwater away. It's that fictitious place known as the magical land of away. There is no magical land of away. Stormwater is here. It's our water, and we have to treat it with reverence and respect, because all the water we have is all the water we have. We're not going to get suddenly a shipment from outer space.
So. Right. Dave Giordano, explain what this has to do with, for instance, Root Pike Win and the most important issues and concerns and themes that that your organization addresses. How does this fold into that?
Well, Root Pike Win is it's kind of a unique nonprofit in that we're really a environmental project development organization. We look at recommendations from EPA and DNR approved plans, and we try to implement them. We work with local municipalities, other government agencies, landowners, and we're kind of a dating service. We marry up these projects with the landowners. It doesn't always happen, but we're the catalyst out there to try to make it happen. And I think our story today is really about three things. It's about innovation, it's about partnership, and it's about momentum. We have a lot of positive momentum in our watershed right now, where, as Nan mentioned, people are now starting to really appreciate the fact that, you know, what we do on the land is the report card for the water.
Mm.
So we've taken that very seriously, and we've had a lot of fun marrying up projects. And so, we got wind of a project up in Milwaukee, really what I would consider to be the first RSC here in the state of Wisconsin, which Adrian's group was involved with. And we had another project identified in one of these plans, the Pike River plan, not too far from the one we're going to talk about today on KR. And so we got that one moving about 4 years ago, and actually it's taken a lot longer, but we're actually going to break ground this spring on that one too. Hmm. We had a lot of conversations with the DOT and the DNR and Foxconn and the Village of Summers about some of the things that were going to go on with that massive development. So I got a call one day from the DOT, and they said, yeah, we know you're trying to implement this Pike River plan. You know, where is there a possible synergy there where we could work together and make sure that we're doing things that are aligning with the plan as well? And that's gold, you know, for us, because that's really what's defined in the plan, is work with your government agencies to try and do better.
And so they were reaching out to you.
Yeah, in an interesting kind of way. But that's, you know, that's one part of the story. The other part of the story is that Kenosha County also reached out to us and said, hey, you know, KR is going to get expanded. We want to do the right thing for the Pike River. Are there synergies there? Are there opportunities there? There's good developable land there, but we also want to strike the balance with, you know, the stream corridor along the Pike River on the North Branch. And so those two things kind of came together. Both those entities were talking to me, and so our organization brought them together and said, let's sit down and see what could work. Ironically, the first project we were working on, the design was complete for that, and that RSC, I said, well, why can't we use that kind of idea on a kind of a troubled stretch, or a stretch that they were trying to figure out the best land use? And so we'll get into how this really optimizes stormwater management, but it also, in certain cases, can take up less developable land. And to us, that's, and to a lot of other people involved with this, that's a win-win.
Absolutely. So, Nan Calvert, before we talk about this new way and then bring in, of course, our special guest, Adrian, I want you to explain what typically happens now when we have a big torrential rainfall and there is this stormwater runoff. Typically, what determines right now, in kind of the standard way of doing things, where that water goes?
Well, there's a couple of different ways to answer that. So let's talk about the concept of a watershed. The vast majority of people don't know what a watershed is because we're not taught that when we're in school. So a watershed is the area in which or to which water tends to drain. Everybody on Earth lives in a watershed somewhere. It has nothing to do with municipal boundaries or state line divisions or any of that sort of thing. It's dependent upon the lay of the land, and yes, of course, we have sort of rearranged the lay of the land to accommodate for various and sundry things in modern life, but our water tends to drain to somewhere most often. So you might live in the Lake Michigan watershed, you might live in the Pike River watershed, or the Root River watershed, and the Root Pike watershed is very, very large. Within those watersheds, when rainwater hits the ground or snow and ice melt, it picks up all kinds of things, petrochemicals, lawn chemicals, soil, just a whole host of things that don't belong in our water supply. And then it runs in the stormwater, into the stormwater sewer system. And it goes into the typical stormwater sewer system where you have sort of curb and gutter, or you have ditches along the way, and then that water disappears into those things, and then we don't think about it, but it goes into the nearest body of water. It doesn't go to the water treatment plant. Most people think that it goes to the water treatment plant, but in most instances, it doesn't. So it just, you know, takes with it whatever it has, and there you have it. Sometimes those things are really heavy, like salt and PAHs, and they fall to the bottom, and sometimes they bind with sediment in the bottom. Other times it's over-nutrition, so runoff from farm fields and turf fertilizers, and it causes algae blooms and all the terrible stuff that happens with that. Then, of course, I think many people remember back in 2017, we had an enormous amount of flooding. And so just think of all of that stuff that gets mixed up in flood water, and then it eventually recedes. And because we're having more frequent and more severe instances of flooding, new ways of handling stormwater runoff, much more efficient ways of handling stormwater runoff are essential, like an RSC, because they can handle, you have a different way of processing it in terms of the land that the water goes to, and it's more efficient and hopefully helps filter out some of those things, slows the volume, and hopefully decreases the velocity.
And so part of this is that the water ends up going where we want it to go.
Right, instead of in our basements and filling up streets so that carp are swimming up the street. And right, you know, I mean, that did happen.
Exactly. So when did we start to wake up to this being a problem?
About yesterday, actually. unfortunately, you know, the fortunate part is that people are starting to wake up about it. People are becoming more educated about this thing. But it is a little late in coming, if you will. But, you know, we still have time to deal with it, and that's what we're doing. We hope that this project will be a model that people, municipalities, turn to say, hey, yeah, we know what? We need to do this a little bit differently than what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. On today's morning show, for those of you just joining us, we have, of course, the familiar voice of Nan Calvert, as well as Dave Giordano, Executive Director of Root Pike Win. And now we want to bring in a very special guest on the morning show for the first time. Her name is Adrienne Sizek, and she is the Senior Project Engineer for Stormwater Solutions Engineering. And so this would be a firm that has been tangling with this problem and coming up with some innovative solutions to it. So first of all, we welcome you to the morning show. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning.
So tell us, first of all, your own background when it just kind of comes to this whole issue. And actually, let's take just a second and find out about your background as an engineer. I have only recently come to really understand just how rich a term that is and all the interesting things that engineers do. Give us just a little sense of your own professional path that has ultimately taken you to the work you're doing now with Stormwater Solutions Engineering.
Well, sure. So I actually didn't even know what an engineer was until I was probably a sophomore in college.
Wow.
I sort of knew it was something that was beyond driving a train, but wasn't quite sure what that looked like, but had been looking sort of for where I would find something to merge my interests, and I like science, and I like math, and I like creativity, and engineering was a really great blend of all of those. I also really had a passion for finding a balance between human development and environmental sustainability, and found that the water field was a really great opportunity to find those balances. So I, as a junior in college, became a track for engineering and sort of was able to finish, and then went on to graduate school in North Carolina. I got my undergrad at UW-Madison, got my master's at University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill in the School of Public Health, and did some work with bacteria and pathogens in stormwater. And then I was able to work for a really small firm out in North Carolina looking at using wastewater reuse for talking about these waste products that we view as waste products. It was reusing wastewater within like subsurface garden or planters using that to treat the wastewater but also provide nutrients for the plants and sustain that. So it was a really small firm, and then I can't even remember the dates, but maybe around 2010, I received a fellowship from the EPA to go back to school at North Carolina State University into their stormwater team, basically, and was able to study these regenerative stormwater conveyance systems in terms of how they perform, how they can be better designed, how they can be used to manage our stormwater. Just a little background on where these came from. They originated in the Chesapeake Bay area way back, actually, before we even started researching them. They had been installed for a number of years, probably as early as 2000. And they had been installed, people could see. They weren't even being really designed by engineers. They were more of like an ecological stream restoration type system. They were being used for stabilization at outfalls that were really like where a pipe distributes water, and then it kind of gets eroded and it becomes a really big problem. And so they were being used to stabilize these systems, but people could see that they were working, which is why they kept getting installed. These are working really well. You can conceptually understand that if water is kind of going into this sand layer beneath these regenerative stormwater conveyance, that, well, clearly the water is going to be getting filtered. So people could understand that they were working. How well they were working was not quantified. And so that's where I kind of stepped in and was able to, with funding from the EPA, really dig into some of these things. And I spent 4.5 years doing that. So, and then when I graduated, I moved back to Milwaukee. I'm from originally from Wisconsin, and Carrie Bristol-Grohl is the owner of Stormwater Solutions Engineering. It was kind of funny, actually. I was looking for a job, and people were emailing her my resume, and like, you two would be a really good fit. And so we got together, and she had the foresight to see these regenerative stormwater conveyance could be a real asset in this area. So she hired me, and we've sort of been going since then.
Wow. So in other words, her company, so she's the owner?
Carrie Bristol-Grohl's
owner. So it existed even apart from this specific practice that we're talking about?
Absolutely, yeah. So the company started in 2002, and even before that, she had been I believe she was the first stormwater engineer in the city of Brookfield. So stormwater management has been around since the Clean Water Act, actually. However, how we've approached it has changed dramatically as we've sort of learned more and seen that dealing with these what's called point source, so like where water comes out of a pipe, that's not really doing the trick. Our surface waters are still polluted. Why are these still polluted? Oh, there's all this other sort of water coming in from these non-specific points that are bringing pollutants in as well. So then we sort of evolved from this managing at the end of the pipe to we need to manage up in our watersheds. And so stormwater has been regulated since the late 1990s in terms of you have to manage your stormwater, but how that looks has changed a lot in the last number of years, decades even, I guess.
Right. So I'm just curious if you can just say a little bit more about how Stormwater Solutions Engineering was doing this before you came along with this innovative new practice. I mean, what kinds of things were they constructing or designing or building to try to combat this issue of stormwater?
Right.
Runoff?
So everyone has seen stormwater management around. You just might not identify it as that. So the more conventional ways of managing your stormwater is if you're looking at a roadway, you get the water off the road. So the roadway is kind of pitched towards the edges and you see these ditches. So that's how you would move the stormwater. We've for a long time have had to treat something called suspended solids. So basically the sort of, if you would look at a jar of water that you just grabbed from the stormwater runoff, you would see that it's kind of cloudy. That's because there's these sediments floating in the water. And so we would have to get rid of those sediments to a degree. And so how we would do that conventionally is we would put it into a pond, and then it would have time to settle out, and then the clean water off the top would drain from there. So that was one aspect. The other thing that ponds do well is that they slow the water down, and then instead of having a big flush of water coming off your impervious surface into your stream, it holds the water back and kind of regulates how fast that water comes out, so we're not getting these huge flushes.
So you're slowing it down.
But you're also not doing anything with the volume, so there's a downfall of the pond. But if you, go through most any subdivision, you'll see ponds, and we sort of try to look at them as an asset, but they can be. But they really are your stormwater management for those subdivisions, for along roadways. You see, even if you coming down from Milwaukee today, I drove down 94. There's ponds spattered around there. Those are their stormwater management devices. So that's the conventional way of managing stormwater. There's some problems with that. I mean, so they do a pretty good job of settling out sediments, but as we have these other pollutants that we're becoming interested in, like bacteria and phosphorus, that behave differently to some degree than suspended solids, that we need to start thinking about more innovative ways to manage these pollutants. The other thing that ponds don't do very well, I kind of mentioned, is the volume. So if you are covering what was previously permeable, allowing water to infiltrate, and you put an impervious surface on that, not only are you increasing the rate at which water runs off, you're increasing the volume. There's no water that's infiltrating anymore. So ponds do a really good job of managing that flow rate that's coming out of off the impervious surface, but they don't do much for managing that volume. So really our surface waters are seeing a lot more quantity of water coming to them ultimately. So we need to think of what ways to reduce that volume as well.
Hmm.
And that's where we've sort of stepped in now.
We're speaking with Adrian Sizek, who is Senior Project Engineer with Stormwater Solutions Engineering. So what we're talking about is a new means of doing this called regenerative stormwater conveyance. And of course, what has Nan Calvert doing cartwheels and handsprings is the fact that this makes extensive use of native plants. Mm-hmm. And Dave Giordano mentioned earlier that there is an example of this being constructed really close to us, right around the corner of County KR and Highway 31. And so, and your firm has a hand in the design of what is being put there.
Yes.
So explain what this looks like. If we drive past this, I don't mean now, I mean once it's once it's finished, what would we see and what would it look like, in a sense, to the amateur eye?
Well, our goal is, at this point with stormwater management, is to sort of make it not look like stormwater management. You don't want it to look like anything as different than sort of a really nice little like a native planted area. Mm-hmm. However, if you sort of dig in a little, you'd see that there is this series of pools, so depressions or pools that sort of step down in a stair step way down the slope. Mm-hmm. There's some rocks involved in sort of in managing the water as it comes out of the pool and stabilizing that point where the water drops over the edge of the pool. Beneath that, there's a sand and wood chip layer that's very permeable, so water can infiltrate into it very well, very quickly. And that wood chip layer, sand and wood chip layer, goes the entire length of the system. So once water is infiltrated into it, it can seep very slowly through the system and get all of that filtration benefit. Hmm. And then at the end of it, it will either, in this case, because we have actually a driveway at the end of it, we'll be putting it into an under drain, so a pipe that's underneath the media that will then lead to the Pike River. Ideally, if you didn't have that driveway, you could kind of just have it seep out into the Pike River, which is a much more, that would be what naturally happens in a system adjacent to a river. So there's a lot happening underneath the surface, but we really don't want, we want people to know about it, but we don't want it to look like this engineered system. We want it to look like a very natural system that integrates well into the landscape and just looks, especially with the Pike River right there, we want it to look natural. So,
right. So how large a thing are we talking about?
This one is quite large. If you were having to design a stormwater management for the expansion of KR, really you're only by regulation required to manage the additional flows coming off that. So you think like KR is this big, or one lane on each side currently, and it's expanding. So we'd really only have to manage that additional for that additional impervious surface. With this design, though, because there was already a swale that or a ditch that was alongside the existing KR that they were going to keep those existing flows in untreated, just keep discharging to the Pike River, but we've intercepted those flows as well as the additional flows. So we're managing, and I don't know how much a number would mean to our guests, but we're managing over 200 cubic feet per second of water in a 100-year storm event. So it's quite a large system. We have to reduce that flow to what we would see if there was no expansion. So we were able to do that with the RSC. In terms of square footage of area, if you were just looking at over the top of it, I believe it's just a little over an acre in terms of just looking down at it.
Mm-hmm. And are we talking about one corner of that intersection?
It is, and that is a good point. So if you were to do, like, what we were comparing this against is the conventional way would have been a pond, in which case you would have to keep it sort of in a flat area, which was not adjacent to the road, because if you are going along KR towards the Pike River, it's dropping down in elevation because it's going to the river. Mm. So you'd have to have this pond sort of up smack dab in the middle of this parcel almost, where the RSC, yes, is along the roadway. It's kind of tucked in where you would normally see a roadside ditch, except it's going to be a little bit bigger than that. Mm-hmm. But it is really tucked into that edge.
And I think what's really cool about this innovation is you can kind of bend and flex it and shape it to accommodate different complexities with what the landowner might have in terms of their overall goals for that land, and still trying to dovetail that into the DOT's requirements for what needs to get done and the requirements of the DNR with regard to how much water is actually being treated. So this is why it's such a great innovation, is it's not a really a one size fits all. It's really kind of a customized solution that can be used in a lot of different applications. And one of the big goals was this with this particular scenario was to try and dovetail it into that corner in a way that would maximize or at least reduce the amount of land that would be taken up by a typical pond. So that saved about an acre of developable land.
Hmm.
And if any, you know, most people know the corner of KR and 31, that's a hot corner now. That you could see why that land is so valuable. And if that land is, I don't know what the actual value of it is right now, but an acre of land right now on that corner is worth a lot of money.
Mm.
So we really were able to find the win-win here, and you have partners like the DNR and the DOT and Kenosha County that were willing to listen and work through some of the complexities of a new innovation. It took about 10 meetings to get it to this point. But yeah, there was a spirit of partnership here, and I think that's what's so awesome about you know, what Adrian was able to bring to the table.
Mm. Is this something that is applicable to all kinds of different situations and settings, or is this especially appropriate for this place that we're talking about near the corner of 31 and KR?
Well, as Dave mentioned, it's very adaptable, so I believe that it's definitely not the silver bullet. I mean, there's no silver bullet in stormwater or probably in life, but it's definitely very applicable to a variety of situations. We have one, Dave mentioned this, in Milwaukee up at Lake Park by North Point Lighthouse that we've installed. We installed it in 2016, so it's about 4 years old now. And that was in this bluff ravine, so it was quite a big slope coming down from the bluff, about 20%, and we installed one to sort of restabilize that ravine as well as get this water quality benefit throughout the system. So that was a totally separate example of where this was applicable. The one that we've talked about in, is it the town of Summers? Is that where it is technically?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That one was a incised tributary, which is a whole other thing because you're talking about now what DNR calls a navigable waterway, which basically means that there's water. You could float a little craft, or in this case, like a plank of wood, down it at some point in the year. So that's a whole different application and to using this system. So it's really applicable to a variety of situations. And the other thing is that it's one of the best solutions for situations, especially where you have steep slopes. There's not a lot of tools that we have as engineers to get water quality, stabilization, and safe conveyance or movement of water down a slope. And this has really been, I think, an attractive solution to a lot of regulators, a lot of people when in these specific scenarios.
I think, you know, one of the other benefits to this solution too is that the maintenance costs on a pond can be a lot of money. A pond is this kind of like a pool filter. At some point you got to either change it or clean it out. Well, ponds are the same way; they fill up.
Mm.
The RSC works a little bit differently in that there's, you know, the maintenance costs aren't near what they are with a normal pond. So for a landowner or a municipality, that's also what I would call a cost of ownership benefit, not just a first cost benefit.
Hmm. How usable is this in a truly urban setting where there's just all kinds of the dreaded impervious surfaces that we're talking about? I mean, is this less applicable in those situations?
That's a good question. I would say that would be probably pretty site-specific. It is nice to have the space. So in the urban setting, you typically wouldn't manage a 100-year storm event. So that's the big one, the big one that us engineers use as our sort of target. We have to be able to manage this. And I would design, if I'm designing an RSC, I'm designing it so that 100-year event can fit through that RSC. And like our urban storm sewers are maybe designed for a 10-year event or a 25-year event, which is much smaller. So for example, just to give a example, a 100-year event in Milwaukee is close to 6 inches of rainfall over a 24-hour period, where a 10-year event might be more like 3.5 inches of rainfall. So there's a big difference in sort of what is required of our urban environments So in that case, an RSC would take up a little bit more space probably than what we would, like a pipe is what probably we use now. However, there's a lot of applications where you can think about getting innovative, and there's a lot of other tools we have for urban environments. So if an RSC isn't the right solution, there's things like called bioswales, which are basically like if you just isolated one of those pools of the RSC and got that, you got your one pool, you get filtration, and then you would have some sort of storm sewer connection to it. There's porous pavement, there's urban trees, there's a variety of different options we would use in a very, very urban environment.
Right. And the firm you're with, Stormwater Solutions Engineering, deals with all of those options, it sounds like.
We do, yeah. We have become, I would say, a go-to person for what's called, these options are called green infrastructure. And so we, because we're in Milwaukee, which is in sort of Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District's main area, I guess, a large area of their district, and they have an incentive to install green infrastructure to sort of keep their stormwater out of their storm sewer or their sanitary sewers. And so they have a lot of incentive to do that, and we have been involved in a lot of projects using green infrastructure for that purpose exactly.
And if I could just add, we've taken the RSC idea to the University of Wisconsin Parkside, that campus. There's a couple areas there where they want to improve their stormwater management, and there's a good possibility that you'll see an RSC on that campus soon.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I'm sure we have not talked about native plants enough for native Nan Calvert's liking.
Absolutely not.
So let's take a couple of minutes to just explain why that component matters as much as it does, and also the kind of choices then you end up making within the whole realm of native plants in terms of choosing what is going to be the best element for this project.
And that's a really good point. Native plants are a huge component of RSCs, and I'm sorry for not mentioning those beforehand. Yes, so native plants are wonderful things, and I am totally there with you on that. Their roots are just very extensive and very deep, and we talked a little bit about the volume before. Native plants really do a good job of helping that stormwater infiltrate into the ground, so we're reducing our volume coming out of even the RSC because the water's not leaving through that underdrain at the end. It's going into the ground. It also, native plants use a lot of water just to grow, so they do something called evapotranspiration, so they're using that water to grow, and then they emit it as vapor. The other thing that native plants do really well is they help stabilize because of that extensive root system. They're stabilizing the system as they grow. They also do a really good job of hosting microbial communities that do a lot of pollutant transformation, so the host communities that are predators to bacteria, different bacteria systems, they host communities that can convert phosphorus into a phosphorus that's in the water into something that the plant can use, so that removes it from the water. They do a really good job of and same with nitrogen. So they're really just, and the other thing that they do is that a lot of people, one of the maintenance questions that I get oftentimes is, will these systems clog? Because it's a filter. If you typically see a sand filter used in wastewater treatment, they have to scrape the top and clean it off because it will clog. Well, plants, because they're constantly growing new roots, they're growing, basically creating new pathways of for water through the media. So the system is basically regenerative. It's not going to need sort of that human intervention for maintenance. It's self-cleaning in that way.
It's amazing. Nan, can you explain why native plants have this capacity that just a plant doesn't?
Yes, I can, actually. So when you think about, for example, when you think about some native species, well, pretty much all native species, when you think about garlic mustard or buckthorn, and especially with honeysuckle, they have very short, comparatively short root systems. So sometimes even when an invasive honeysuckle species looks quite large, you can often go and grab it and just kind of pluck it out of the ground because their root systems aren't particularly vigorous. And even with even with conventional garden plants or horticultural plants, they just don't have the kind of root systems that native plants do. You have to remember that our native plant species evolved part and parcel along with the conditions that they found. So the different soils and the hydrology of the area and the climate and all that sort of thing. So as a result of that evolutionary process, they are, if you will, collaborative with the other things. So we have native plants that don't give a hoot or a holler if you have heavy soils, which we tend to call clay soils. They either like it, they need it, or they don't care about it. We have native plants that love to thrive in looser soils like sandy substrates covered with wood mulch or wood chips. You know, you have all different plants that are well suited to certain types of soil conditions. And because they're meant to last and stay there for a very, very long time, they've developed these amazing root structures in order to do that. So, you know, they're kind of the best thing for preventing erosion and stabilizing steep banks, stream banks. And I was just thinking about when we were mentioning stormwater detention ponds, oftentimes you'll see that the edges of the pond begin to erode and then the banks get undercut, and that contributes to the silting in of those ponds as well as all the runoff that goes into them. But when you vegetate a stormwater detention or retention pond with native plants, you can forestall that process and then limit the amount that you have to dredge out of those things. So yeah, you know, that's a whole nother show. But yeah, so you know, if you want to do the best by soil conditions and water quality and clarity, get those native plants in there. If we put them in our home landscapes, in our business landscapes, it only assists and supports what's being done with regenerative stormwater conveyance systems and other innovative and cutting-edge approaches to stormwater runoff and water conservation.
Very good.
I'd like to just throw in there too what you mentioned about they're meant to be there a long time. Once a native plant community is established, they're really resilient. In like stormwater systems are not for the weak.
Right.
they're systems that are inundated and then they're dry and then they're inundated again. So yeah, a native plant community can really thrive once it's established in one of these systems better than something that doesn't have such a extensive root structure.
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about the root structures of native plants and how extensive they are. They experience a dieback every season. So a certain percentage of those root structures will die back, naturally decompose, and contribute to soil health and soil quality. And then as the growing season comes back upon us once again, then new root structures, new root tissue begins to grow, which is, of course, why they don't clog things up like we think they're going to, or like some people think they're going to. And I just want to say really quickly, think about the habitat that this creates. Habitat for native pollinators, native birds, all kinds of things. So we're creating little pockets of habitat for other native species that we desperately need.
And on that as well, and we're deterring other creatures like geese with these native plants, because a lot of times geese prefer having a big open space to land, like a stormwater pond. Mm-hmm. When you don't have standing water in RSCs and you have a lot of higher plants like the native plants we're just selecting, and geese don't want to be there. They're scared that there might be predators there. There's not a really clear landing spot or takeoff spot. So it actually gets us habitat for beneficial species and deters our sort of more pest species.
You know, it's sad to me that Canada geese get such a bad rap because it's not their fault. We create these habitats in which they thrive, open bodies of water where they can see for, you know, miles, essentially, if a predator is attacking. And then we fertilize all that lovely turf grass, which is so delicious when it comes up. So, you know, we've kind of made them the bad guys.
Right.
They're actually not.
Yes.
But this is why this innovation, there's other innovations out there. This is why, I think this is such an important topic, because you can see, we talk about the stormwater sandwich, and that these projects don't they typically don't have one benefit. They have multiple benefits. This one here has a lot of benefits, and that's why we're so excited about it. I mean, you're dealing with stormwater management in a better way. You're meeting the cost, schedule, and performance requirements, sometimes exceeding them in the case of water quality. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the fact that this project is also in a prime rusty patch bumblebee, high potential zone. So the plants that you put in there are also going to benefit a federally endangered species. So it's just a really awesome win-win, and I'm so happy to have everybody involved with it.
Wow, it is exciting. So, and is it completed or nearing completion?
Our plan set is at the 90% phase, which basically in DOT language means that the central office will be reviewing, and if we have comments back, we'll make those, and then it will go out for bid for contractors to sort of bid on what they would cost to build it, and then we'll be breaking ground later summer, I believe.
Excellent. Well, we'll be watching with great interest, certainly, and I really appreciate you joining us today to share all this information. Adrian Sizek, Senior Project Engineer with Stormwater Solutions Engineering. It's great to meet you and great to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And, of course, Dave Giordano, Executive Director of Root Pike Wind. Great to have you here as well.
Always great to be here.
And Nan Calvert, thanks for arranging this. Do you have a calendar of events to share with us?
Yes, you're welcome. This was really fascinating, and I'm so glad that we got to talk about this finally. Yes, okay, important things going on. First, I have to talk about EcoFest Racine, Saturday, March 21st, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. EcoFest celebrates Gateway Technical Colleges and Greening Greater Racine's commitment to our environment by helping educate our community about eco-friendly changes they can make in their homes and lives. More than 50 groups with displays about local environmental organization, green products, home and yard care, and so much more will be on hand. There will be informational presentations and demonstrations from area experts on solar energy, sustainability, and climate change. There are hands-on educational activities for kids and those who are young at heart. Eco art display by the Vital Art Project. There is also free electronics recycling, including computer equipment, industrial equipment, medical equipment, and security devices, but no televisions. Don't bring your televisions because they won't be accepted. So that, again, let me say that date one more time. It is March 21st from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can go to gtc.edu/EcoFest to get all of the information. Riverbend Nature Center, Sugar and Off Pancake Breakfasts continue every Sunday in March from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. You'll eat delicious pancakes with maple syrup, hike through the woods, and learn the process of sap collection and syrup production. Adults are $8, children 10 and under are $5, and if you're 3 years old or younger, you get in for free. And finally, well, it's not finally, it's all we have time for. It's Pringle Nature Center, Saturday, March 14th, 10 a.m. and 11:45, two separate sessions. Warmer weather means maple syrup. Join Pringle Nature Center at Petrifying Springs County Park for a short hike and a hands-on tree tapping demonstration. This is free, no registration is required. And remember, it's not at the Pringle Nature Center, it's actually at Petrifying Springs. You can call the Nature Center for details.
Whew,
that's
busy
a lot,
time of year.
Isn't it? Yes, absolutely. It is a very busy time of year.
But nice to see that so many exciting things are going on. And Nan Calvert, we appreciate you filling us in on all of that, and of course also for arranging today's really interesting morning show program. We thank you very, very much.
Oh, well, you're welcome. It's my privilege, and we are so grateful to have this opportunity to talk about what's going on in our community, in our watershed.
Very good. The time is 8:58 here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, we'll be talking with the co-authors of a book called Hollywood Her Story, which tells the really fascinating story of how important women have been in the history of films. Who would have thought that in the silent film era, there were nearly as many women as men involved? And in many respects, women were actually the driving force during the silent film era. And this fascinating book explores that and much, much more. I speak to the co-authors tomorrow. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire.